You're listening to EFT Radio Online, where we explore meridian tapping techniques for self-help and peak performance. By listening to this audio, you agree to the disclaimer located at eftradioonline.com/disclaimer. If you'd like to get the schedule of all the upcoming EFT radio shows and access to archive shows, please visit us at eftradioonline.com, where you can subscribe to our free newsletter.
Hello, and welcome to Karma Clearing. Complete your past, experience love now. A radio show that will put you on the fast track to finding your life's purpose and living your passion in challenging times. Our host today is Dr. Paula Horan, a celebrated author with extensive experience of a wide range of ancient yogic practices for clearing karmic blocks, which makes her rendition of the EFT process extremely powerful and cathartic. How can you let go of your ego's never-ending addiction to suffering and experience a lightening of being? Find out now with Paula Horan.
Hi, I'm Paula Horan, and I want to welcome you to Karma Clearing, a program which focuses on using emotional freedom techniques, otherwise known as EFT, to complete the charge of unconscious emotional patterns and literally lighten your load so that you can perceive the world more clearly, minus all of the filters of your conditioned patterns. Once our perception is free of these blocks, all areas of our life improve. Now, today, I'm speaking to you from Boulder, Colorado. My guest, Franz Stina, will be joining us on Skype from his home in Australia. I've invited Franz on the show today because he and his wife, Bronwyn, a native of Australia, Franz, by the way, is from Netherlands, have done some of the most extensive research on the actual history of Reiki and of Usui Sensei, the founder of Reiki. Now, not everyone is familiar with Usui Sensei's background as the great Tendai Buddhist practitioner and lay priest. For those not familiar with the term Reiki, by the way, also, Reiki is a Japanese word which means universal life force energy. Today it is known all over the world as a simple hands-on healing technique which helps people do treatments on themselves as well as others. Not everyone is aware that Usui Sensei was primarily a meditation teacher and that initially he taught Reiki only to his Buddhist disciples as a tool to stay healthy, and most likely for his beginning students, to help them quiet their mind as well as raise their life force energy. His main focus was actually to help them wake up rather than specifically on healing. The fact is, disease is clearly caused by a disturbed mind. When you can quiet the mind, many physical disturbances simply disappear. The practice of Reiki came into being after Usui had a very special experience on the sacred Mount Kurama in Japan at the end of a 21-day fasting and meditation retreat. He had a powerful vision which also brought on certain siddhis, as they're called in the Indian tradition, or heightened abilities, which he later learned how to transfer to others. It was only later, after a terrible earthquake hit Japan, when he and his students went out to heal the sick and injured, and ended up saving a large number of people as a result, that Usui's extraordinary skill became known, and thus he later became called on to teach the Usui method of natural healing, which is now known the world over as Reiki. And many of my listeners are probably aware that I am most known for my books on Reiki, the first having been published back in 1989, and which is translated into 20 languages. I'm still teaching Reiki today in conjunction with EFT, as well as a 5-day Yan Yoga retreat on non-dual awareness. The purpose of the retreat is similar probably to Usui's, which is to help people finally penetrate the heavily conditioned mind which loves to suffer and directly experience their own unbridled awareness. And what I really like about Reiki is that the practice of Reiki can help people clear a lot of emotional dross and prepare the way for a direct experience of their own true nature. Although many use Reiki as a kind of band-aid with the motivation to heal immediate physical or emotional pain, which is also a very good thing, it is actually a wonderful spiritual practice for calming the mind and raising one's life force energy, which are both important components if you're interested in waking up. Now today, I want to focus on Reiki as a spiritual practice, rather than the healing practice it is most known as, which is why I invited Franz onto the show. Because of his research, he will be able to fill in a lot of the personal history of Usui and his own motivation, not only to help people heal, but to help them wake up. You see, as it so happens, back in the 80s, when I became a Reiki master, Western practitioners did not realize that Usui's tradition had even carried on after World War II. In the early 90s, however, it finally came to light that there was still an active Usui Reiki Gakkai, or school, and that it was there, and that there were actually also numerous meditations and spiritual practices that went along with Reiki, something we hadn't actually learned in the West. Because we had so little information about Dr. Usui in the early days, when Mrs. Takata, a Japanese-American Reiki master who was trained by one of Dr. Usui's direct students, first began to train her own Western students to teach, we discovered the true mystery of Reiki through our own, and at that point, anyway, we still had to, you know, learn the true mystery of Reiki through our own practice, and that's actually how it was for me. Because truly, at that time, we didn't realize the full extent of Usui's own training. But I must admit, I could sense it, yet, and really intuited that there was truly something profound in this simple technique. And I've always shared with my students that I feel that it is the simple hands-on healing practice of Reiki that quieted my mind to such a degree that it really enabled me to recognize the true depth of my guru, Sri H.W. Poonjaji, when I finally met him. You know, for me, meditation was always difficult before I came across Reiki. You know, before our lives were changed with the predominance of cell phones and computers, I already had a multitasking mind. And the practice of Reiki gave me the gift of greater concentration, a quiet mind, and truly a deep sense of peace. So today, Franz and I will discuss how you too can bring the same sense of peace into your own practice. So Franz, welcome. Thanks for coming on our show today. It's really great to have you.
Thank you, Paula. I'm excited about this. And I too lived in India for a while and in Kathmandu for a while. So we kind of have the same kind of background in that way. So yeah, I'm looking forward to explore the system of Reiki for your listeners today.
Yeah, I think you and I really share that same fervor to really help people wake up with this wonderful tool called Reiki, and how it is such a precious assist to meditation. You know, Franz, in this day and age of microwave food, you know, cell phones, fluoridated toothpaste, which unfortunately cause disturbances in the magnetic center of our brain, and as Russian scientists have proven, actually cause us to be more susceptible to the programming on TV, I feel it is more important than ever that we find time each day with some form of meditation and also use the practice of mindfulness throughout the day to try and counteract the terrible effects of all this electronic pollution that is having on our basic capacities as human beings to concentrate and be present in our life. Can you tell us how your work with the Usui's original meditations can help people deal with this onslaught of technology that we're all faced with?
Yeah, for me, the technology is also very much what I call like heavenly energy orientated. It's all kind of really sitting around our head. We watch television, we watch the computer screen, we have the phone near our ear. So all that energy we kind of working with is really becoming more and more and more disturbed around the head. And we hardly work anymore with that earth energy, you know, digging in the garden, really feeling that connection with the earth. So we create a really kind of big energetic space around our head and nothing around the lower part of our body, kind of just below our navel. So I feel we become upside down pyramids. And as we all know, upside down pyramids are very unbalanced. And I think this is why a lot of people nowadays have problems in their life. And actually, I was reading a newspaper the other day in Canada when I was teaching there that in Canada, 30% people suffer more from depression than from cancer. So cancer is one in three people, which means depression is already one in two people, which is huge. And of course, we know that when people are depressed, we feel unbalanced. We feel not really stable. And I think that is really one of the issues, what you're kind of saying, you know, the electromagnetic field, computers, telephones, you name it, really dealing with that energy around our head. So for me, one of the most important tools Usui was already teaching was making sure that we can bring our energy down to what they call like the tandon or hara, and it's a concentration point just below your belly button. And when we do that more and more and more, also the excess crazy energy around our head is really coming more into our center of our body. And we all know that if we feel unbalanced, we feel kind of uncentered. And when we feel uncentered, when something happens in our life, we become quickly angry or worried or fearful. And so Mikasu was teaching us really to center ourselves. And I think at that time it was a really important practice when Mikasu was teaching in the late 1800s, beginning 1900s. But I think it's even more important now with all the modern technology, what is going on around us.
Absolutely. Well, could you tell us a little bit about how we can use mindfulness to counter this really gross imbalance? I mean, what you're discussing is absolutely right on. And how we can actually use mindfulness as a tool to get centered again, along with this wonderful hands-on practice. And for those, I guess we should also mention quickly too that for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with Reiki, Reiki is kind of a hands-on healing technique where we share energy or channel energy to ourselves or to other people. But along with that, what interested me so much in your work with your wife Bronwyn is your amazing and really wonderful and thorough job of research, discovering all the other meditation work that Usui did with his students, which is so helpful. And could you talk a little bit more about that and sort of introduce us to some of the research you did before we get into maybe into mindfulness, just some about some of the things that you discovered and what you use a lot now?
Yeah, you know, for me, I see if I want to help other people, then I need to become a vehicle for this universal energy. And to become a vehicle for this universal energy, I need to make sure that the vehicle where it goes through, so that's my mind, my body, and my energy, that it is clear. If I want to draw some water through a straw into my mouth, then that straw needs to be clear. If the straw has a kink or a hole on it, then it becomes really difficult to suck the water up. So it's the same. The more we really discover our true self, and in Japanese, the word Reiki not only stands for spiritual energy, but it also stands for true self. So the word Reiki is really telling us that we have to discover our true self. And the more we discover our true self, then the more we become a clearer vehicle for helping other people. And within the traditional system of Reiki, there were meditations, hands-on healing. You would work with certain precepts. So, for example, do not anger or do not worry or be compassionate to yourself and others. Then there is also symbols and mantras. And these tools were the symbols and mantras were traditionally for yourself. very much about mindfulness, actually. And then the fifth element within the system of Reiki is an initiation, or the Japanese call it a reiju, what means like a spiritual blessing. So if you want to practice the system of Reiki from a more traditional approach, you would actually work not just with hands-on healing, but also practicing the meditations, meditating on the precepts, meditating on the symbols and the mantras, and performing or receiving these spiritual blessings to help us to purify ourselves so that we become a clear vehicle for us as a practitioner to embody the spiritual energy or the universe. So mindfulness really is interwoven in all kind of what Mikusu was teaching. And for example, when we look at even simple hands-on healing, because when I place my hand on my own knee, for example, then my mind will go to the knee. And normally our mind is kind of all over the place. We think about the past, we think about the present, we think about the future, we're really all over the place. And as we all know, energy follows the mind. So if our mind is all over the place, our own energy is also all over the place. What means is that our mind normally is at the past or the future. And therefore our energy is also in the past and the future, and not really within ourselves. And if the energy is not really within ourselves, we don't have a lot of energy for ourselves to combat what you were saying, all the computers, all the modern technology, relationship issue, work relationship issues,
the million and one
distractions. Absolutely.
Right.
But if we actually bring that energy back into our body, so become more mindful, because mindfulness, we have to say, what do we have to be mindful of? We cannot just say be mindful, because then we don't really know what mindfulness is. But we have to ask ourselves, what do we need to be mindful of? And we need to be mindful of that our mind is not in the past and in the present and not playing tricks with us in a moment. So mindfulness is really bringing the mind back into, first of all, into our physical body. And when I place my hand on myself or on someone else, for a very brief instant, we focus our mind on that hand position, and therefore also the energy goes to that specific spot where we touch. But of course, due to our habits, the mind really quickly goes somewhere else again. You know, we get
the laundry list
again.
Or whatever.
Absolutely. And so we get really quickly distracted. So the many hand positions help us to become more and more mindful. So each time we kind of need to bring that mind back to, oh, my hand is resting on the knee. Oh, my hand is resting on the heart. Because that also kind of focuses the energy.
And I'm feeling such and such. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, also, you know, the feeling such and such can also be a distraction. So the mindfulness within the system of Reiki, we can see in the hand positions, but also in the meditations and in the symbols and the mantras. So for example, when we chant a mantra, the mantra helps us to focus just on the mantra. So normally, again, we focus on myriad of things. But when we just focus on the mantra, then our mind becomes more quiet and more at peace. So the more we kind of utilize these mantras for ourselves, then our mind stops to chase all these other kind of elements within our life. Oh, I need to do this. Oh, I need to do this. Oh, last week this happened. Oh, tomorrow I need to do that. Oh, today I need to do this. Because we're kind of really focusing on that particular moment, our mind on the mantra. So it's very important that if we work with a mantra, and not only in the system of Reiki, but as you know, Paula, in lots of Hindu traditions or Himalayan traditions or Tibetan traditions, in Japan, same in China.
There's a lot of mantras to come.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because if you do meditate a lot, then you discover that going on, even when your mind is, the quote, mind is quiet, in the background, in the subconscious mind, it's still rattling on.
That's right.
And it's the mantras that really still that unconscious rattling that goes on in the background all the time.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is a really important tool within the system of Reiki. So within the system of Reiki, there's the second level is called Okuden. And Okuden in Japanese means inner or hidden teachings. Mm-hmm. And it means finding what is hidden within ourselves. So the mantras in level two are really there to help you to quieten your mind so that we can find what is hidden within ourselves. And, of course, what is hidden within ourselves is our true self, or Reiki. And this is one of the reasons I recently created a CD called Primordial Sounds for Healing, where I focus only on Japanese sounds and mantras to help us to become more mindful again and really go deeper within ourselves so that we all can rediscover our true self again.
And true self kind of being awareness, isn't it? Just awareness itself.
Yeah, it's
nothing
awareness
really
itself.
Defined. I mean, in the Buddhist sense, it's that openness, the spaciousness. There is no self.
Absolutely. True self is actually realizing that there is no self. There is no I. Being, as you say, being like space.
Right.
And this is one of the reasons I just actually this morning I got the design of the front cover, and we put like a sky behind it because it's that openness what is so important. So for me also, if our energy is very narrow, then we also become very narrow-minded. If we become very open with our energy and very expanded like the sky, we also become very open-minded. And open-mindedness can only become because we use mindfulness. Because if we have all these myriad of thoughts going about past, present, and future stuff, then we actually become very narrow-minded. Our energy is very narrow. But if we are mindful of not getting distracted by the past, the present, and the future, and really being in that one moment in time, then we can become more and more open-minded because we're not clocked up by all the other rubbish of the past and the present and the future.
Right. It's really helping us drop our identification with thoughts. My guru once expressed it well, being lost in the graveyard of the mind, because every thought we think is in the past. So if we're identified with a thought, we're not in the present moment now. We're off in space. We're in memory. And even to think of something about the future, we actually have to use thoughts from the past. So whatever thought we think that we're identified with, it's putting us to sleep. We're in the past. We're not in the present moment now.
Absolutely. And I think if we're not in the present moment, we cannot reap the full enjoyment of the present moment. So
exactly.
We're suffering.
Yes.
And when we really free in this present moment, life becomes, you know, what they call in many traditions, you know, the inner bliss. And we can find that inner bliss in life. Everything smells good. Everything tastes good. Everything, what we touch is amazing because we're not clocked up with all the past experience we have about what we touch, see, feel, or hear, or taste. And so it's really being open, and life becomes tremendously fluid and exciting and playful. And that, for me, really is what the system of Reiki was about. It was really about opening up yourself to be unified with the universal energy so that we can dance in that space.
Absolutely.
of spiritual freedom, what is, you know, absolutely wonderful.
So, you know, maybe it would help at this point for our listeners if you could go a little more into depth of how mindfulness can help, you know, especially people who may be listening in that are already Reiki practitioners. How can mindfulness help Reiki practitioners go deeper into the practice of Reiki?
Well, one of the things I see a lot, you know, when people, for example, practice hands-on healing, I hear many, many teachers say, okay, put your hands on the person, and it's okay if you watch television, or it's okay if you talk with someone. But we all know if I put my hands on someone to do a hands-on healing session, and I think about my chai latte later, and what I'm going to have in Starbucks with a little chocolate brownie, then of course my mind is in Starbucks. My energy is also in Starbucks. So for hands-on healing to be really successful, we really need to be mindful and bring our mind back to actually what we're doing and not being distracted by all kind of other thoughts. So for Reiki practitioners to actually go deeper into their own personal self-practice, when we do hands-on healing on ourselves or when we do the meditations, really be mindful of what you're doing. So focus on your hands. If you feel you're getting distracted about what you're going to do later on or about the past, bring it back to what you're doing. If you do a hands-on healing session on someone and you start to get worried or fearful or your mind get distracted, bring it back. So mindfulness is actually having kind of a watchman next to you that says, hey, Franz, you're getting distracted here. You start to think about Starbucks and chai lattes and chocolate brownies. Your energy is going that way. Bring it back to what you're doing. Franz, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing a hands-on healing.
Right. And beginners have to expect that, isn't it? They really need to expect that that is going to happen in the beginning of their practice.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But if they do practice daily, then it's amazing. After a while, you don't... The mind really does stay with its attention wherever the hand is put, and less do you get called off into these little reveries.
Yeah, and I think this is why hands-on healing on yourself and actually practicing on other people. I mean, as a Reiki teacher, I still do many Reiki treatments. I was just teaching in Cincinnati and in San Francisco, and I not only did Reiki classes, but I also did treatments, and I do 14 treatments, 1 hour treatments in 2 days, and I find it fantastic. It really helps me to be mindful. So during every treatment, I say, okay, Franz, we need to be mindful of what we're doing. And therefore, also doing treatments, some people they say, Franz, if I do 3 treatments, I get really tired. And that's because most of the time they're not mindful during the treatment. So they not only put their hands on that person, but their energy and mind is completely somewhere else. And that actually created tiredness. If they're really mindful of what they're doing, their energy becomes so focused and so powerful that after doing 5 treatments or 10 treatments in a day, you feel energized. You feel fantastic.
That's right. It's all about being present. And, you know, that's in fact why with my own students for 25 years, I've always told them they must do treatments on other people for the first 21 days for the very reason that as beginners, it's so difficult to focus on our own body. We're not willing to give ourselves, when we focus on our own body, the attention that we're willing to give someone out on the outside. In other words, our subject-object relationship with reality is so strong that we're more used to giving our attention outwardly than inward. And so I actually use that for my students by having them treat other people. It's easier in the beginning to concentrate and focus on others than it is on ourselves. But by doing that, eventually, then it becomes easier also to treat yourself and stay mindful, to stay present with yourself.
Absolutely. I say it actually in a rather direct way in my classes, and I say, it's easier to look at someone else's shit than your own shit.
That's true, too.
because we don't like to look at our own shit. We go like, ooh, you know, it's all a bit too scary and confrontational. And it's much easier to point a finger to the other person and say, oh, look at their shit, look what they're going through. Oh, but actually, as a practitioner, it's so important. You were saying you're going to do a retreat in the Himalayas, and I think it's so important as a teacher and as a practitioner that we take the time for ourselves to purify yourself.
Absolutely.
And Paula, I also see it like this, like a daily practice. And you talked about the, computers and telephones and all this electromagnetic stuff. If I do the dishes, I like doing the dishes. And so I see it like this.
That's funny, so do I.
Well, that's good. Yeah. But you know what? If I cook tonight and I leave the dishes sitting there to tomorrow morning, they're very difficult to clean. Hmm. It's better to clean the dishes straight after you've been cooking, right, or have you had your dinner. So what tells us, every day when I accumulate things, if I do a meditation once a week, then it's like these dishes, what's been sitting there for the whole week, that accumulated stuff is really difficult to purify because it's been sitting there the whole week. But if I do every day a little bit of practice, it becomes like the dishes, what straight away I wash after having my meal, it's so much easier to purify and clean. So I always suggest, if you really want to, you know, go deeper and finding your true self, it's better to actually have a small daily practice than, say, once a week for half an hour or an hour. Absolutely. Because every day purifying a little bit more of yourself is much more beneficial.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. I actually do hours of daily practice every morning. When I'm at home, I usually get up like 4 in the morning and practice till about 7 or 8. So, you know, I always tell my students, you know, 1 hour is nothing.
Absolutely.
Hour, it's peanuts.
And Kathmandu is a beautiful place to practice.
Well, it's a bit smoggy these days. I'd rather be a little further out.
Yeah, the Kathmandu Valley would be nicer.
Yeah, it's gotten invaded in the last 10 years. It's pretty dense now, densely populated. Yeah.
Yeah, I lived there 15 years ago.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Actually, Broman and I, we got married in Kathmandu.
Oh, did you? Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Where were you living?
We were kind of just living in a hotel for a while. And
what part of town?
Just in the most touristy part.
Oh, Tamil, probably.
Yes, that's where we live. It was central and it was easy, and but we got married in one of the Tibetan Buddhist monasteries at Onida Big Stupa.
Oh yeah, at Bodhnath. That's where I live.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's
a beautiful area.
You were practicing Reiki at that time too, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, we did, actually. And then we opened up a Reiki center in Darjeeling.
Uh-huh. That's also a beautiful place.
Oh, that's absolutely stunning, yeah.
Well, wonderful. Well, how would you like to share a mindfulness practice for our listeners?
Yeah, I've got this mindfulness practice, and I think it's, I've been thinking about it while we were talking, Paula, and it also kind of ties in with the Primordial Sounds for Healing CD. In Japan, one of the mindfulness practices is working with 5 sounds. So it's a mantra. And these sounds are really, really simple. It's A-O-U-A-E.
Uh-huh.
So A-O-U-A-E.
Uh-huh.
And the best thing to do it is actually you sit kind of straight. You have your really straight posture, not too tense, but that you're nice and open. And the most important thing with these sounds is that it comes from your lower abdomen. So the hara or the tandem, just below your belly button. So what we do is kind of you breathe in through your nose and you bring your mind and your breath all the way down to just below your belly button. And then on the out breath, you say these sounds. And I can do it a couple of times with you. And then if listeners want, they can actually chant a little bit along. And then they can try it at home after they've listened to this program and see how this feels. And these are kind of the what they call the 5 great vowels in Japanese. And they're very, very powerful. They're very simple, but they have a really direct connection to this primordial energy or to your true self. So maybe I'll do a bit of chanting for you. So I'll do about 5 minutes. Is this normally how you do that, Paula?
Yes. Or it can actually, we can take up to half an hour. So if you have others, exercise you'd like to share as well, or just this one, it's up to you.
Okay, well, I do first this and we see how we go.
Okay.
Okay, so just go into your own quiet space.
Would you like me to join you, Franz, or just let you chant on your own?
Oh, you can join me if you like, you know.
My voice may be a bit croaky today. I'm doing a detox at the moment.
Okay.
That's the only thing I'm worried. Not worried, but concerned.
You can be quiet. You can soak up the energy and just be quiet. So also for me, these sounds are very healing. And so one of the things I always say when I do any kind of practice is that I set my intent that I want to heal myself and that I receive from this practice whatever I need for this healing to take place. So that creates a really open intent. And for listeners, if you listen to the sounds, then you can also say that you kind of receive from the sounds whatever you need for that healing to take place. Okay, so let's just go into our own quiet space. Maybe first take a couple of deep breaths. So we're breathing in through the nose. We bring it all the way down to just below your belly button. And we slowly breathe out. And we breathe into the hara again. Just below your belly button. And slowly we breathe out. We do it one more time. Breathing in. On the out breath, let go of all the tensions, of all the preconceived ideas. Be completely open. And we set our mind that we want to heal ourselves, and that we receive whatever we need for this healing to take place.
Always.
Resonance, what you have created. Ready, take a deep breath and slowly bring your awareness back into your body. Ah, good.
Yes, I didn't dare join you today. I love chanting, by the way. But actually coughing out sand from the Gobi Desert still from my trip to Beijing. So I didn't want to start coughing in the middle of it. And your sound is so rich. It's actually I started to feel part of my brain lighting up at one point. It was really, really nice. Very beautiful. And I imagine if your CD, so this is one of the ones on your CD?
Something similar? Not. Well, but it's very similar, yeah. So there's nine tracks on it, and so each track is about 6 minutes, 5-6 minutes long. And what really focuses on these Japanese Kotodama, what they call it, like mantras, to help you to, you know, really rediscover your true self again. And I think the power of sound it's such a powerful thing. And all the ancients, you know, as you were saying, you know, in Nepal or in Buddhism or Hinduism or Japanese philosophy or Chinese teachings, shamanic teachings, they all work with sounds to become more mindful. And when we focus and we listen to this sound, it's really that mindfulness what we place, that focus what we place on the sound, what then this our habitual thinking kind of moves to the background so that we can become more clear. And as you say, then we feel more brighter and our brain will lit up. And the more our brain will lit up, the more we discover our own inner beautiful bright light.
Absolutely. More mindfulness.
Yes.
More mindful, more present in every moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Franz, for giving us this time today. Is there anything you would like to share with our listeners before we close the show? Is there anything, words of advice? Especially, I know we'll have a lot of Reiki practitioners and even probably some Reiki teachers listening into this show.
Yeah, one of the most important things, what I see, I teach worldwide, and a lot of our classes are, for example, when I teach in Europe or in the States or in Canada, is a lot of existing Reiki teachers who want to take their practice further and deeper. And I always believe we can always take our practice deeper until we achieve supreme enlightenment ultimately. And even then, we need to keep practicing. So what I see is that when people really, existing Reiki teachers or practitioners, people who've done Reiki 1 or 2 and who come and do our classes, when they really start to focus more inwards within themselves, really becoming more aware of purifying their own layers of anger and worry and fear, utilizing the more traditional tools of the system of Reiki as Miku Sui taught it, like really meditating on the precepts, meditating with the symbols and the mantras, seeing the hands-on healing as a form of meditation, looking at the initiation as a form of meditation. And, you know, we really teach according to that. And the more I see Reiki teachers do that, they actually often 2 months later after the class, they report back and they say, wow, I've been teaching for 10 years or for 15 years, but I've never experienced this. And even my existing students are saying, hey, what are you doing different? This is so much more powerful, takes us so much more deeper, and it's because of their own personal practice.
Right.
And this is what I see too. Often 50% of the classes in the Shimpudan Reiki 3 classes, what we teach, is also resitters. So some teachers come and resit for the 7th, 8th, 9th time, because when they grow, say I teach in April in San Francisco and I come back next year, April there, then both the teacher and the student, we've been practicing and we can go deeper, and now we come back together again, there is more possibility to take that another step deeper. And I think that is really important, creating this community, this Reiki community, what has a sense of spiritual development, not just seeing the system of Reiki as hands-on healing, but more so as a serious spiritual practice.
Mm. Great. So any words of advice for budding practitioners?
Really trying to focus more inwards within yourself. So sitting down, doing your daily practice. Hands-on healing is great, but what I see a lot, you know, people that say, oh, I hop in bed at night, put my hands on myself, and 2 minutes later I'm asleep. Oh, I did a great hands-on healing practice. Well, no, you were asleep. Yes, of course, it creates relaxation, but you know, you want to go deeper. Ultimately, we all want to go deeper. We all want to be ultimately in a state where we have let go of the anger and the worry and the fear, where we can be humble and honest and be compassionate.
Right. But what I see also is if they do just that simple bit of treating themselves, initially anyway, treating themselves,
yeah,
at least that in the evening and every morning, eventually
it's better something than nothing.
Then they will gain the motivation to do even more practice, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, hands-on healing is really the first step.
Right.
And it's the first step of wanting to do something for yourself. And then, but there is so much more. And this is also what I see often is that Reiki practitioners, they start off with Reiki, with hands-on healing, and then they go into Buddhism or Taoism or Tai Chi or yoga or Qigong because they want to go deeper within themselves.
Right.
But often this is not taught in the way they learn the system of Reiki. But it is within the system of Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right,
but
because he was a great Vajrayana master. Doctors,
well, ultimately,
he was, absolutely.
He was, you know, he's practicing Mahayana Buddhism, and we can see all of that. And we can see that already in the precepts, you know, show compassion to yourself and others, that he was teaching from a Mahayana viewpoint, what
right.
always includes other people.
True. All right. Well, Franz, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and your years of practice now. You've been going at it for a while. And
yeah. We actually, April, well, it's May now, but last April, just last week, we had the International House of Reiki for 15 years.
That's right. I saw that in my email box. I want to congratulate you on that. Both you and Bronwyn have done such a fine job, really.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Wonderful, Jay.
From the whole Reiki community, thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Truly. So, again, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and insights with us today. And I also want to thank all of you who are listening in to today's show for joining in. And remember to have a look at Franz's new CD, which is called Primordial Sounds for Healing. And it's available on www.ihreiki.com. That stands for International House of Reiki. But again, it's www.ihreiki.com. And also be sure and order Franz's book, The Japanese Art of Reiki, and the ever-popular Reiki Source book, which will give you plenty of information on the different meditations of the doctor. I still say sorry, Dr. Asui. We know now he was not. He was actually sensei. But anyway, it has a lot of the traditional Reiki information in it. And if you wish to be on this show or submit questions, you can contact me at paulaharan@me.com. Be sure and order my new book, Fierce Innocence, at amazon.com/author/Paula Horan. Also, you can find out more about my programs and download two of my meditations for free at www.paulahoran.com. Tune in 2 weeks from now on EFTRadioOnline.com as we join celebrated author and Buddhist teacher Tara Brach as we explore more ways to complete the past and experience love now. This is Paula Horan talking to you from Boulder, Colorado, and Franz Steiner from his home in Australia. I wish you much love. Have a great day.